Penguin Random House Canada presents an audio production of How I Spent My Summer Holidays by W. O. Mitchell, abridged and read for you by the author.
It seems so long ago. It's as though I am listening to my own voice coming to me not just from my own past, but from much beyond that, and from quite another world, the age of Jason, or of Ulysses, or of Aeneas. We'd been divinely created, for the Bible and Mrs. Judge Hannah told us so in Knox Presbyterian Sunday School. Hesiod would compare us to the pre-Aryan Silver Age heroes, eaters of bread utterly subject to our mothers, however long we lived. Labadie and the lyre and Peter Dean Cooper and Angus Hannah and I, all the others, never sacrificed to the gods. No, not all that sure about Austin Musgrave. We did make deals with the gods, Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Holy Roller, Anglican. Oh, God, get me through that exam tomorrow in percent and interest and capital, and I'll never smoke another Milbank. Oh, God, let me win that fight with Hodder behind Sir Walter Raleigh school after four, and I promise not to get Daisy inwards to lift her skirt, pull down her pants to show it. It's a good bargain for us, but a poor deal from God's point of view, for it had been quite disappointing and nothing at all to see. That age and the isolated rural village of my boyhood are long, long gone. Our town lay in the South Saskatchewan prairies, 60 miles north of the Montana border. The superlative sun that shone down on us was Greek. The grass sea around us was our Aegean. I was born there in 1912, the same year the town was born. By the time of my birth, it had grown to almost 5,000 people, if one included the population of the provincial mental hospital. The village I knew no longer lives. I look at the Millennium spots like pearskin bruises on the backs of my hands and a mourn pecks bad boy. I wonder what the hell the S. in William S. Hart's name stood for. Mourning the loss of an age of innocence, I suppose I'm falling into the sentimental trap set for most of us in our lear years. The loss of my innocence was not a simple event. It must have been an imperceptible corruption taking time. Probably been well started when I saw the ad on a back page of War Aces magazine, with the cartoon of a small boy smirking and leaning nonchalantly against a street wall while a porter with a great trunk on his slant back struggled toward a hotel door. From the trunk lid, there fanned up lines crying, "Let me out! Let me out!" The ad promised that if I sent my 10 cents to Chicago, I would receive by return mail Ventrilo, magic instrument that would fit under your tongue and enable you to throw your voice just as well as the boy helping the porter with the trunk on his back. Well, Ventrilo turned out to be a disappointing disc of tin folded into a half circle with a hole punched through both sides. Also, I received a postage-stamp small booklet of faded pink explaining that the instrument would assist me in doing bird calls. I didn't even try. I had no desire to thrill my parents and friends with bird song. The booklet said that I had now undertaken with them a solemn contract never to reveal to anyone these ventriloquial secrets that the world-famous Vox Humana had entrusted to the Ventrilo people in Chicago. I, too, could become a great ventriloquist if I followed their instructions to the letter. Without moving your lips, say the alphabet over and over while standing in front of a mirror. After a week of practice, I still couldn't throw my voice. And I had discovered that only the most gifted and experienced of ventriloquists should attempt the following words, part and puck And, of course, punt. My innocence crumbled more when I realized that in spite of detailed instructions from 1,000 things a boy can do, I'd never be able to carve and steam and torque a boomerang that would ever come back to me. I never did get the opportunity to follow their advice under horses, runaway, how to stop. With the illustration of a boy soaring upwards like a ballet dancer to grab the bridle of a foam-flecked horse with eyeballs rolled back so that only their whites showed. But I'm certain I was saved from yet another broken adult promise to fertilize my growing cynicism. Events of the summer of 1924 accelerated that irreversible corruption of my innocence. That was the year I was 12, and there should have been a rage in heaven. Most important to me and the others in our child world was the Little Souris River, a wandering prairie vein, dark with earth flower, rushing and swollen with snow runoff in early spring, shrinking and slowing almost to stillness by mid-August. The river was ours, though it did seem undeserved, almost a miracle. For water ought to be earned through digging a well to find it or a dugout to capture it. In all seasons we were drawn to that river, less often for skating in winter, almost daily to swim during our summer holidays. Sundays, never. It was not Canterbury so much as Mecca, for the prairie air was desert dry in our Arab nostrils, and long before we had reached the river we had taken off our blouses to put them over our heads with the sleeves tied behind our necks as burnouses. We didn't often carry on beyond the river to the east and Broken Shell Grove. That part of the river was seldom used for secular purposes, just Sunday school picnics and for the South Saskatchewan Holy Rollers summer camp meeting. For 3 weeks in July, their great khaki tent would be pitched in the grove while they testified and prayed and converted and immersed in the river for spiritual cleansing. Their tent often had a happy sound, with singing and piano accompaniment exuberant as a tennis ball bounding downstairs. Sadie Rossdance's 3 cottages had a happy sound, too. There was also a piano in each of them. It's almost 20 years since I'd been back there, when I returned from my town's 50th birthday in August of 1962. I climbed under the barbed wire and walked across what had once been Mulbier land, unchanged, for whoever farmed it now kept it as pasture. Even as I began to walk towards the river, I realized that I was on a time return. It was the same wind as the wind of my boyhood, still careless in the prairie grass, like the braided whisper that sighed restlessly through our classrooms. Maybe it wasn't the wind, but the grasshopper stirred by my feet to leap ahead of me and drift sideways on the wind that carried me with them in a memory loop back to Sir Walter Raleigh School and Mr. Mackey. For a moment, it was difficult to find any relationship at all between our principal and the grasshoppers, and then I remembered consequences. I didn't like that word as a boy. Mr. Mackey did. Any boy found carving his initials on the desks, any boy found in the schoolrooms in possession of a slingshot, any boy caught using the tin fire escape as a plaything will have to suffer the consequences. There was. Consequences were something to be suffered. Our lives had been mined with them, so that all pleasures must be followed by an explosion of unpleasant consequences. At the beginning of each school year, Mr. Mackey would line us up in the hallway, both sexes from grade 1 to grade 8, to listen to his ant and grasshopper speech. After the grasshopper had wasted his summer in sloth and fun to die of starvation, Mr. Mackey went on to tell us of the ant society.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?